Hello and welcome back to General Chat, the podcast about fandom. This is your host, Anastasia Solis. I am so excited to bring you this week's interview. Our guest this week is the creator of adorably relatable comics about mental health issues. Her comics feature pigeons, and those trash birds help us figure out the trash thoughts our brain tries to tell us. We talk about her upcoming book, the pros and cons of creating relatable mental health content, why Animal Crossing is so appealing to adult audiences, and how creating art can help ease the stigma around mental health. This week's ep is a really fun one, so let's hurry up and get into it. All right, thank you so much for coming on, Jack.
Oh, thank you for having me. Sorry about all the technical issues.
It is absolutely okay. Listeners, we had a little bit of electric boogalooing happening up front. We had a bit of a struggle getting together, but I think that struggle will make this interview all the sweeter when it is done. Oh, boy. So I know you via your heckin' relatable comics.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Most of which are mental health related. Why did you decide to start making comics about mental health?
So I've always loved drawing and making little silly comics. And I think I started making comics more specifically about mental health when... So it was after I just left uni and I was working like a really sort of soul-crushing retail job. And I found that had a really negative effect on my mental health, and making it worse than it already was, using like my human persona, probably about 4 years ago. And then I just thought they were really good at kind of, venting and getting things that happened to me sort of out into something productive. And then I just decided to start using pigeons because I thought they were really cute, and I felt bad for them because they get a load of hate from people. So I thought, oh, that's like a really good metaphor, I guess, for what you go through when you experience mental health. And yeah, here we are.
It really is, because people call pigeons trash birds, and they're like, you know, the lowest of the birds, and that's kind of how we feel a bit when we have mental health, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I remember what specifically made me start using pigeons was when I was sitting in the city where I lived at the time, and I just overheard some people like insulting pigeons as they walked by, and it just made me really sad to imagine if a pigeon could understand that. They mind their own business, they're just sitting there just eating whatever they can, and they get a lot of hate. And I think that works very well as sort of like a metaphor for when you experience mental illness, and when you just kind of go about your daily life and you're not doing anything wrong, but your brain is just sort of insulting you and shouting at you and calling you garbage. So yeah, I think trash bird is a very good way of expressing that.
You mentioned drawing from a very young age and creating comics for a while. Can you tell us your first memory of creating art and thinking, oh, this is something that I really enjoy and that I'm going to continue doing?
It's really embarrassing, but my first memory of showing someone a drawing was when I was maybe 5, and I'd drawn a picture of my my cousins and my aunt and my uncle, and I wrote "I love you" over the top, but I spelt "you" with an "se" on the end because I thought if it's more than one person, it's not "you," it's "yous." So I showed it to my uncle, and he was like, "Oh, I love yous. That's really nice." And I was like, "Yeah, aww, this feels good showing people drawings, and it makes them smile." So it's really embarrassing, but I think that's probably the earliest memory I have.
Well, your pieces naturally garnish an emotional response. How do you feel when you create something and it elicits a lot of emotional reaction?
It's quite bittersweet knowing that a lot of people can relate to it, in the sense that it's quite sad that so many people have so many struggles with mental illness. But I think it's very comforting to know that there's people out there that know what it's like. So when I see a lot of people say, "Oh, I know how this feels," and so on, like it is a bit sad for a moment to think that there are a lot of people that go through it, but it makes me feel a bit better knowing that I'm not really alone and that there's other people that know what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you made a comic very recently that was talking about managing mental illness and it being a juggling act, and you have to balance mm-hmm. like trying not to burn out and trying to be productive and trying to have time to relax and how to do that and why it's so difficult. And that yeah. was really relatable for me. I have a very hard time because I do the podcast. I'm a very early art adapter, so I've just started making art in the past year or so, and just like all these other things that I do, plus work and family and dealing with like depression, anxiety, and wanting to just like be in bed all the time and be like,
yeah,
it's such a hard balancing act. So it's really cool to know that someone else who's also doing okay is dealing with it.
Oh, thank you. I think it is, especially when you have hobbies that are quite creative, like, you know, podcasting or drawing as well. It's feels like it's even harder to sort of juggle, because you want to do these things that make you happy, but you can't do them because you have no energy, and then it's just kind of like a horrible cycle. And actually last night, when I got home, it's been sort of the busiest period of the year for me at work, and I was kind of staying late and just like not having any time to do anything for myself. And I got home and I went to bed at 8 p.m. and just slept until 11 o'clock this morning, just because it just takes it all out of you and you just need to like hide away for a while.
Oh, that sounds so lovely.
It was really nice, yeah.
You started at such a young age wanting to share your art and be creative and make things. Did that continue for you throughout your, you know, elementary, high school years?
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone goes through that phase when you're sort of like 10 to 13. You love anime and manga. So I remember being really into that and drawing a lot. And I wasn't sort of technically good, but I would see a load of comics that I liked and I would try and redraw the panels and stuff. The only time I think it kind of faltered was when I was maybe 16 or 17. I went to I went from secondary school to college, which is different from American college in that it's kind of between 17 and 18 you'll go to you'll spend 2 years in either sixth form or college before going to university. So I went to college and I tried doing a graphic design class and I just hated it. I don't know why. So I dropped that and then I kind of didn't really draw for a while. But then when I went to university, I started up again. So it's still like a good solid chunk of teenage years and like childhood years I did spend drawing.
Do you think having that creative hobby and any other creative hobbies you might have had, be it games or being into fantasy books, do you think having those kind of nerdy hobbies impacted your youth?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't really play a lot of games when I was a teenager, but when I was a kid, I definitely did. And obviously, like I said, when I was in school, it was sort of anime and manga, and I liked fantasy and just things like that. And I think I was sort of like the typical weird kid who you know, like a very stereotypical kid who loves anime and manga and was a bit like eccentric. And I think it made me feel very lonely, but at the same time, having those hobbies, like, it took up my time and it really got me into spending more time online and making lots of friends that way. So it was, yeah, it was really comforting. And I think it, if I wasn't into those things, I think I would have been quite even more introverted and a bit lonelier. Yeah, I think they were a good part of my youth to have.
Well, now through social media like Twitter and Instagram, you can share your art worldwide, and you can share your interests and meet other artists who are interested in the same things as you. Do you think that having those young formative hobbies, like, you know, perhaps watching Sailor Moon as a kid and then connecting with other people that do Sailor Moon fan art over Twitter, has really helped you as an adult have a community of like a nerdy family?
Yeah, definitely. It's not a TV show, but have you ever heard of Neopets? Did you ever used to play that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that was, I remember I would upload drawings to DeviantArt when I was younger, and I think that's how I discovered Neopets. And I would spend all my time on that and talking in online communities. And actually, that's how I met one of my best friends. So I was 12 and she was 14. And we're still best friends now. She lives in the same city I do. And it's been 12 years since we met, just on a Neo board. And there's still a few people that you sort of follow across the sites as they change in popularity. So from like DeviantArt to Tumblr and Twitter and Instagram, there's like a handful of people who I've sort of followed all that time where they've changed social media. And it is really like, it's really comforting. Like you've never, even though I don't speak regularly to a lot of them, it's very comforting to know that there's other people that share your interests and that you have kind of weirdly grown up with in a way.
I do think that's true, and I think it's really lovely the ability to be able to watch someone grow, especially if you've been following them since the forum days, or when they're posting the first arts on DeviantArt, and now they're on Twitter and on Instagram, and you're seeing these beautiful rendered paintings or these really relatable comics, and you're just like, wow, I remember when you were just posting black and white doodles, and
yeah.
It's really inspiring to see that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember just there have been like a few people. I mainly use Twitter now, and there's been a few people who I would follow or they would follow me, and then I would go on their profile and was like, oh my god, I saw you like 10 years ago, and it's really weird to just find you again, and you've grown so much.
Well, speaking of growth, are there any areas of growth that you would like to see in your own art?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I have sort of gotten better over the past year, in the sense that I started off just drawing using just pen, and I would scan them in with my shitty scanner, and now I use a graphics tablet, and I think I've gotten a lot better at digital art, but I think I can get a lot better. Like, I'm still not I wish my art was sort of technically better. Like, I'm not very good at shading or doing a lot of depth. So I think I'd like to work on that.
So what is the idealized version of your career look like? You're already doing a lot. You're putting out a book, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And, you know, you've got a fair amount of followers. Your comic's very relatable. So I would say that you are doing very well. But in your opinion, what does your ideal career look like?
Aw, thank you. It's really weird because I've thought about whether I would want to be like a full-time freelance artist, and I don't think it's right for me at this point in my life. I know it's probably something that you get used to if that is your job, but I just do not have the discipline to, you know, work all day on if I'm not in an office where I have to log on at a certain time and be there 9 to 5, like I just won't do anything. But I think I would like to work on selling more things. So I've only done one convention, and I'd love to do more and kind of establish a bigger presence in the real life selling world, and definitely sell more things on my Etsy and just produce more physical products that I could sell. But in terms of a sort of long-term career, I've never really thought about it. I think right now I'm happy just having it, even though it does take up a lot of my time, it's something I do on the side for a little extra. So for now I'm okay having like a full-time job and then doing this on the side, but who knows?
I think that's a very interesting point when you're talking about, I know my limits, to know that working from home and trying to be productive are not things that actually go together for me.
Yeah.
I think that's a very self-aware statement to make.
Yeah, I think it's good to kind of, because I remember when I was younger, the idea of being an artist full-time really appealed to me, but I don't think I understood quite that it's, you know, the grind is very intense. I don't think I'm at a point where I could do that, but again, maybe in like 5 years time we'll be different.
Well, who knows, in 5 years time we'll be different.
Exactly.
So I hinted at your book a little bit earlier, and I want to talk a bit about it. So it's called Bird Brain, and can you give us a little bit of a summary?
Yeah, sure. So the book is called Bird Brain, and it's a collection of around 80 comics. There are around a quarter of that are new and exclusive comics that are just for the book, and then I've redrawn several of my old comics to include in the book. So like I said earlier, I started off just using pen and paper, and now I've moved on to digital art. So I thought it was a really good chance to go back on old comics and, you know, improve them, make them look a lot nicer. So it's a comic collection, but there's also some text in it as well. So it's split up into three sections. The first part being about negativity, and the second part being about relationships, and the third part being about positivity. So all the comics in those sections follow that section's themes. And then sort of every few comics, there's maybe one or two pages of text where I write about the experience that the particular comic it's proceeding or following is based on anything. And I talk a little bit about that and talk a little bit about my general experiences, like, you know, having relationships when you're mentally ill, and how it affects your views of being positive and how the negativity can sort of take over your life, and just sort of basically channeling that into writing as well as drawing. So it's a mix of both mediums, and I'm really excited for it to come out, I haven't got a confirmed date yet, but it will be later this year. I actually sent back my last edited notes 2 weeks ago, so I'm hoping to hear back soon about a specific timeline, but it's basically done.
That's quite exciting. I saw that it was fully funded. I'm excited to be able to read it.
Yeah.
So I will, you know, I'll put all your links in the description and people will be able to check that out. And I hope they grab a copy when it comes out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you can still pledge online, I think. I haven't checked. And I'll be posting an update soon on it on the website. It sort of functions as a bit of a blog as well. So I'll write soon just to confirm where everything's at, but you can still pledge, and I'll be offering a deal on some of the pledge rewards. So yeah, listeners, keep an eye and ear out, and there might be some deals. So yeah.
All right, I will keep an eye out for those.
Thank you.
I'll spread them around. What do you think about the idea that folks might pick up your book, read it, and find some form of comfort from knowing that A, other people are having this experience, and B, maybe finding something new about themselves that they hadn't known through your work?
That would just be amazing. That's what I like about publishing things on social media. Because people tend to open up more in social media in the comment sections of things about particular things that they're experiencing, and how a comic I've posted can relate to that and give them a bit of comfort. So to know that, like, it would translate into the real world, and that someone would pick it up and find some comfort in it, would just make all of it worth it, really, I think.
I think so too. That's beautiful. When you're discussing mental health, is it purely coming from a place of your own experience, or are you looking to kind of generalize everyone's experience? What lens are you exploring mental health through?
It's definitely mostly my own. I try not to generalize about it, because obviously everyone's experience is different. But I think it's important that while you don't generalize, you do take into consideration what other people might be going through, just to kind of, so when you're talking about it, so that you give it kind of the wide encompassing scope that it really is. And it's, you know, it's not just a, obviously I can only speak with perfect clarity about what I go through, but I think it's important to mention that everyone's experience is different.
So you use pigeons. Do you think that using a cute design, and I would call your style warm, I would call it adorable. Yeah, I think it doesn't come across as something that's bleak. It still has hope and warmth to it. And do you think that using that sort of style helps in its own way to remove some of the fear and stigma from talking about mental health?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the reasons why I sort of stopped using myself as sort of the character in my comics is because I think if you use a specific person, you know, someone that's recognisably me in a comic about mental health, I think it sort of stops, to a certain extent, stops people from connecting with it fully. Whereas if you use, you know, a cute little pigeon, I think everyone can project themselves onto that. It's something, sort of a blank slate that you can connect with. And I think it's just kind of talking about it in a more fun way, you know, like it's a little animal with a floating eye talking about mental illness. I think it's sort of, I mean, it really makes me happy that you think they're cute, because I think they're cute as well. So I think that definitely makes it easier for people to connect with, as opposed to, you know, like a drawing of a person who has really specific characteristics. I think it's just good to have something neutral that everyone can project themselves onto.
I think folks who may not be experiencing mental illness may see a comic that is more lighthearted in the way that yours is and more cute in the way that yours is, and not feel that, you know, it's something that's so dire that they can read it and go, oh, I didn't know people were having this life experience. I think it opens your art to a wider variety of audiences, even those who aren't struggling with mental health.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
So what do you think about the idea that the more we talk about and the more we normalize mental illness, the easier it is to cope with and to find ways to live with mental health?
I think, yeah, talking about it is definitely the most important thing that you can do. And in a way, that is kind of annoying, because it's very hard to talk about your emotions when you're going through things like anxiety and depression. But just opening up a sort of discourse on it and having people understand what it's like to go through with it can make other people think about it more. You know, people who don't experience it think about more about how they can help and act as a comforting presence and know how to support others, and also creates this sort of unity between people who do experience mental illness, to, you know, like I said earlier, to understand that you're not alone and that it's okay to talk about it or reach out when you're feeling down, and to accept that sometimes you're just going to be sad and there's nothing you can do about it except sort of know that there's other people around you that can take care of you and support you. So I think definitely just keeping a conversation going about it constantly is really important.
Can we talk about pigeons for a second?
Of course.
Okay, so I do think they are very cute. I think they can be regal and beautiful and adorable. Oh, why do we call them trash birds? Why are they treated like the rats of the bird world?
This is like my really lame hobby. I remember when I was sort of doing the first parts of the book, I spent a lot of time learning about pigeons. And in England, at least, I'm not sure about the rest of the world, but they were really prized as a pet. They were used for hunting, obviously for sending letters, you know, especially during the war time. I went to Ireland recently, and there's a part in Belfast where there's a plaque dedicated to a pigeon who delivered loads of letters in record time and ended up saving loads of lives. They were used for meat and for eggs as well. And I think it was pretty much just people turning to chickens. I love chickens, but they did kind of really screw over the pigeon here. They would use chickens instead as a source of meat and of eggs. And in the sort of rise of technology, you don't really need a bird to fly across the country to send a letter. You can just call someone on the phone. So I think it was pretty much everyone just kind of was just like, oh, screw this, and just released their pigeons en masse. And that's why they're so dense in city areas. Because they all kind of stick together. And yeah, it's just upsetting to know that we've started insulting them and calling them trash doves when it's not really their fault they're like that. It just makes me a bit sad.
We did this to the pigeons. Oh no.
Yeah. It's really upsetting. Like, we're seeing people, you know, kick them or chase after them. It just makes me upset. It's like, no, they used to be one of us.
Yeah, no, they're so sweet. They want to come up to you all the time.
Yeah. I think, I know a lot of people are quite scared of birds. So I think, like, they don't like their eyes. They're quite beady. But I think that's what makes pigeons sort of really lovable. They're just so, like, expressionless. And they're just, you know, they're just minding their own business, just having fun.
They're like us. They're just trying to live their best life.
Exactly.
Well, we've been talking a little bit about mental health and your art and your comics. And I know that one of your hobbies is gaming. Do you think we could talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
So when did you start to get into games? Was that more of an adult hobby?
I think I started young. I remember getting a PlayStation 1. I think I would have been about 7 or 8. And I remember playing things like Spyro and Crash Bandicoot and all the Harry Potter games where everyone's face has like 3 pixels and it's just so ugly looking, but it was so fun. I did have a GameCube. I don't think we played that much. We were always like PlayStation loyalists. But I remember one of my favorite things to do was go around my friend's house and play Smash. Yeah, I think from a very young age I've been into it, but I think I've sort of been a casual gamer, really. I don't really like playing massive open world games or like really intense games. I'm just like, you know, I like cute things like Spyro, where you can just sort of wander around and have fun and it's pretty.
We must be around the same age then, because I was about 7, 8 when I got my first PlayStation and PS1. And I was really into Castlevania, really into Spyro. What do you think about the Spyro reboot?
Oh my gosh, I love it. I remember being so upset because I booked a day off work to play it, and then they postponed it. I can't remember how long. It was only about a month, but then I took some time off work again to play it, and just three solid days, I think I sat in front of the TV just playing it. It's so amazing. Like, the graphics are so good, but I think it's done a really good job of staying very loyal to what it was like in the 90s. That sort of tone that it has, I think, is really amazing.
I love it when we can do a reboot well. The most recent Pokemon game, Pikachu Let's Go, is a very good reboot. The Spyro reboot has gotten a lot of really good reviews. It's kind of nice to see some of the things that we enjoy it as kids coming back in a good way. I'm sure there's going to be several that are like awful, but it's kind of nice to see our childhood games coming back.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I one of the things that I'm going to buy for myself when I have enough money is a Switch. And I really want the new Pokemon. But I think it's good because it's obviously got that nostalgia factor. But when it's done well, it's really good for getting like the newer generation into it and getting loads of other people who didn't play it into it. I'm just really excited.
I will say that is 100% true, because I got the Switch as a family gift for Christmas, and we got Minecraft for it. My daughter really loves Minecraft. She's 6. We got Pokemon and we got the new Smash, and she has loved playing the Let's Go Pikachu with me. You can have a second player with you in a lot of situations, and so the battles function like the 2-on-2 battles essentially when you have a second player with you, and they just follow you around and they have their own little Pokemon from your party, and it's really lovely to be able to play together and to show my child something that I loved when I was her age, and it is a really lovely thing to be able to do.
That's so cute. I didn't know you could do that. That's really warmed my heart.
Yeah, so Pokemon can be a multiplayer game now.
Exactly. I remember when you had them on DS and Game Boy, they really emphasized like, play it with your friends. You can get exclusive Pokemon when you trade. And maybe it was just kind of where I lived or like who I was friends with. But when I was sort of growing up, a lot of people stopped playing Pokemon games. And so I got really frustrated, like, I don't have any friends to play with, just give me this Pokemon. But I feel like now with the Switch and with reboots, like it's they've been really successful at getting people to play together again.
I think the introduction of Pokemon Go as as a mobile app, I think got a lot of people that had stopped playing or had never played into playing. And then the advent of the Switch, which is more easily transportable, accessible, has online features, I think really is a much better platform than like the Wii U was, has made it quite a bit more popular with a variety of players now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that summer when Pokemon Go was a thing, that was just like connected all of us as humanity.
You'd be out in the street seeing someone on the phone. You're like,
you out here? Yeah, it was just fun, like being out in a park and you're seeing so many people there, and it's just like you know that they're all looking for a Pokemon. It's just nice.
Well, I imagine especially in London where you're kind of in like a city center and there's probably a ton of people around and you really get that community feel.
Yeah, I remember I was kind of based sort of at, just outside of London, but I would come into the central city a lot for work and to see my friends and my boyfriend, and just the difference was nuts. Like being home, there's like one Pokestop sort of 10 minutes away from you and there's just nothing. But then when you're in the city, like there's things to do and see everywhere, and like it's it was really amazing to see that sort of community grow.
It is actually really interesting how different it is in the suburbs than it is in the cities. I live about 20 minutes outside of DC, and so I occasionally am in DC or in a city area, and the difference is astounding. And Nintendo, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not, but if you're listening, give us suburb kids some love.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, there was definitely a period where Pokemon Go kind of waned a bit. I think it was just as the winter came and people weren't going outside, but when I visited home, I would go out to a park every day because it was about 50 minutes from my house, and that was the only place where you could get Pokemon or see a Pokestop, and there were like two, and one of them was just a bench in the park, and that was it. So I think they definitely need to work on things for this, like the outer city kids. It's not fair.
Yeah, we don't just want Rattatas. Come on.
Oh God, yeah, Zubats.
Is the Pidgey? I guess the Pidgey is the pigeon of the Pokemon world, isn't it?
Yeah, there's also in the newer generations, I forget what one, but there's Pidove, which is it looks more like a pigeon. Yeah, but yeah, there's a lot of good bad Pokemon. I'm very happy about that.
I think one positive aspect of Pokemon Go is that it gets people to kind of get out of the house. Although there are all sorts of news stories about someone's playing Pokemon Go and they've walked off a mountain or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Do you think that games that kind of force you to like get up and do something or get out of the house can be helpful for folks that would normally just stay inside or that are struggling with mental health issues and have a hard time getting outside?
Oh, absolutely. I remember when Pokemon Go became a thing, one of my best friends who experienced depression and found it quite hard to get up and about the house, she showed me how far she'd walked in the first weekend it came out. And I can't remember the exact number, but she must have been walking for a total of like 4 hours that day. And I was just like, that's amazing that it inspires you to get up and be out and kind of like experience the world again. People might be like, oh, but you're still just staring at your phone. But you know, like you're looking around, you're finding landmarks and like you're just outside. And that's just such an achievement sometimes.
There's definitely a stark difference between being at home, being in your space, which can feel at times, as someone who deals with depression, it can feel like a bit of a, I don't want to say a prison, but it's just like you're just around your stuff that you're always around and you just feel like, oh, I'm just here. Sometimes it can feel comfortable, but sometimes it's like when you go outside and you have like, you know, you're breathing fresh air and you have the sun on your face and you're like, oh, yeah, there is more out there than just, you know, my house and my computer. And it seems so silly to say that out loud, but I don't think you can get lost in feeling like, oh, I just need to stay in my house. I'm not doing anything. I just want to be tired. I just want to sit down and relax. Like, you can get lost in that feeling very easily. So I do think it is a good thing to, if you can manage it, to get up and get outside.
Yeah, definitely. Like, obviously, I think everyone has to have days where, you know, you just sit around and you just don't do anything. I think that's very true of everyone.
Absolutely.
I feel like every time I just want to stay in bed and I can't get up, I just always regret it. Like, when I finally managed to get out of my bed at like 4 p.m., you just feel guilty because I feel like I've just wasted a whole day. And even sometimes just going outside 5 minutes to the shop just to get something, like, and you're in your pajamas, like, it just does good to get fresh air, like you said. Just know that there is still like a world out there.
Do you think the guilt is part of the effects of depression? Because I feel like you're depressed, so you're tired. You're maybe not sleeping well, or that's just generally what depression does. So you're tired. You're like, I'm not going to do anything today. And then you tell yourself that you're a lazy person who didn't do anything all day and you should feel bad. Like, yeah. It's all this weird package of just like, bleh.
It's just, yeah, it's just like a vicious cycle. And then it affects how you think everyone feels around you. Like, you know, I think there's a common thing if you have mental illness and you're in a relationship as well, and sometimes you have your moments where you just can't do anything and you have to kind of, you isolate yourself a bit, and then you just get that feeling like, oh, I'm such a gross person. Why is this other person with me? Like, and then you kind of it just spirals down and all these negative feelings of guilt and feeling like you're dragging others down with you.
I think it can be really difficult to challenge those thoughts. I find it relatable when you have a comic in which the pigeon addresses the dark pigeon, right? And it's like, no, I'm not taking your BS anymore. I find that to be quite liberating, because I think it can be really hard to recognize in the moment, hey, this is a depressive episode, or this is an anxious moment, and, you know, I don't have to let it control me. I think that's really difficult to do.
Yeah, it is. And even like, you know, if you're having one of those moments and you do think to yourself, I'm just going through it again. This is gonna pass. It still doesn't make it easier to get through. And sometimes, you know, you'll think, oh, I'll get through this, and you know, that part of your mind is like, no, you won't. You're gonna be miserable forever, and you can't help but believe it.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I think it's nice to be able to talk about it. I think it's nice to be able to address it. But I don't know that I've really dealt with those thoughts in a productive, creative way. I just go, well, in this moment, I feel like everything is useless. And I think the one way that I do deal with it is by going, oh, okay, no feeling is forever, so eventually I won't feel like this anymore. That doesn't help in the moment, but it sure does help when the moment passes and I go, I was right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think when we talk about having these moments and kind of wanting to escape feeling a certain way, brain foggy, or down in the dumps, or anxious, or any of these negative feelings, I think we should talk about video games and escapism, because I think that while video games are a wonderful, creative thing that I think help a lot of people, I do think there is something to be said for dealing with mental illness through escapism and through pouring, you know, a day into playing Diablo, starting to play when it's light out, and then stopping playing when it's light out, and you're just like, well, that was a great use of my time. And how do you feel about using, you know, video games, art, hobbies as a form of escapism?
I think they're a great way of dealing with it. Like you said, you can feel quite guilty when, you know, you're playing a game for 12 hours, and, you know, I think it's important not to let yourself get too caught up in the feelings of validation that gives you, because ultimately it is just a game. And I think it is still important to spend your time doing other things that can give you a source of, you know, sort of relief and validation. But they're just so good for making you feel happy and like you're not living the life that you currently are. And one of my favorite games to do that is Animal Crossing. I'm not actually keeping up with it right now, just because I don't have the time, but whenever I get into it, I get really into it, and it's just such like a nice way to escape into a happy, pure world where nothing goes wrong, and you can do a little bit of work if you want to, but you can also just spend your time fishing and catching bugs. And it's a great way of making yourself feel better, but at the same time I think it is important not to get too caught up with it. I don't know if that's like a controversial thing to say or not.
No, I don't think that it is. I think that it's a very healthy way to approach playing games or any sort of hobby that takes you out of the moment of what you are currently feeling and puts you in another state of being, because that can feel very good. And especially the validation that you get from gaining levels or getting stars or earning bells, you know, that can certainly make you feel good. But it's important to remember that after those things are gone, you are still good and valid.
Yeah.
And to take those things in moderation.
Exactly. I think it's also the physical effects of sitting there and gaming for a while. I think I'm very sensitive to it. I remember when I got my PlayStation and I would sit in front of it for ages, my mum would tell me off and she'd like make me stop playing, and she'd say things like, you're gonna get square eyes, and then I'd be like, oh okay, I guess I should kind of do other things. And then I stood up and I just like all my whole body was pins and needles, and like I would trip because I'd spent ages 2 feet away in front of a screen. I think you do have to make sure like you get up and you have breaks and you don't spend all your time on this thing.
Oh no, that's too relatable, except now I stand up and I just hear all the bones in my body just cracking.
Oh god, yeah. My knees, I dread what my knees are gonna sound like in 5 years if they sound like this now.
Oh yes. Okay, I need to circle back around to Animal Crossing, because are you ready for Animal Crossing 2019?
Oh my god, I'm every day I'm so upset when there's not an announcement about what's happening. Like when I saw the trailer for it, it really solidified my decision to get a Switch. I'm so excited for it. I don't even know what it could be, but I know I'm just going to buy it as soon as it comes out.
There's just something about Animal Crossing that is so wholesome that just speaks to me on a level of like, I don't know how, if I can even explain with words how it makes me feel. It makes me feel warm and happy and like, you know, just existing in a world that doesn't have something like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Or a 24-hour news cycle, or, you know, just where the worries are just like how you treat your neighbors and whether or not your favorite villager is going to move out and things like that. It's such a wonderful game that I think a lot of people can enjoy.
Yeah.
I do have a cyclical relationship, however, with Animal Crossing. I play it like a fever dream for about 6 months out of the year. I like do everything. I build everything. I'm just like, I'm gonna get all the best villagers. I'm gonna theme it a certain way. I do all this stuff and I play it really hardcore for about 6 months. And then at the end of that, I put it down and I don't touch it for another 6 months.
Oh yeah, I'm the same. I don't even know why, because it's not like I stopped enjoying it. I think the last time I played it was probably about 3 months ago. After playing it sort of solidly for 2 months. And I think it does take up a lot of time, like, because you can just sit there so easily and just get lost in it. And then you remember that you have to do other things.
I think what starts happening is it starts out and you don't have any responsibilities. You just have to shake trees.
Yeah.
And then, you know, enjoy your life. And then you get a couple months into it and you're like, oh my god, I've built this house. I've got to pay off 480,000 bells and I need to go to the island. I need to catch beetles and I have to do this and I have all these trees. And you start having responsibilities and at least for me, I'm just like, well, this is now a job.
Yeah.
I'm putting it down. I'll come back later.
That's definitely true. You know, I've got to water all my flowers because I don't have the, I forgot what it's called, the ordinance where everything's perfect. It does take up a lot of time. And then you start thinking, like, as the seasons change, you're like, oh, I have to get this bug that's only out for 2 hours. And it just, like, sort of starts controlling your life again. And then I think you're like, oh, I need to put this down for a bit. But I imagine that will go out the window again when it comes out on Switch.
Oh, I'm certain. I believe that to be true. But no, Animal Crossing starts being too much like real life. You're like, oh man, don't ever get like a job in the more recent ones, like New Leaf and the one that's coming out. I assume you're not going to have a job, but who knows? It's a brand new game. But
you know,
but it's like, it starts becoming too much like real life. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, I think overall, like the reason why you get into it is because there's no like maliciousness in there. Mm-hmm. It's, even though you have all these responsibilities, it's like you can just turn around and walk away from it and then come back when you want to. So it's still always like a sort of comfort.
Absolutely. Oh man, I am ready for 2019 Animal Crossing and also am not ready for 2019 Animal Crossing. Just like, I'm so excited to see what it's going to be. Outside of the digital realm of gaming, do you have any thoughts on tabletop gaming or any experience with D&D or anything like that?
Oh, I'm one of those people who I've made a D&D character. I've never played Dungeons & Dragons in my life. But I love the Adventure Zone podcast. That, I don't know if you've ever listened to it. It's the McElroy brothers playing Dungeons and Dragons. And it's one of the best pieces of media I think I've ever listened to. And I really would love to play things like that. I think the thing is, you don't know where to find people like that. Or, you know, I don't think any of my friends would want to do it. So then he's just like, oh, well, I guess I just won't play.
Well, it depends on how nerdy your friends are. I think, you know, you find it surprisingly easy to convince some folks to play D&D. But the hardest part, I think, is to find a DM. I think
A
DM is like a rare, it's like a shiny Pokemon. You can find players with the drop of a hat, but finding a DM is a little bit harder.
Yeah, I think because there's a lot of responsibility in that role.
Oh, 100%. And to your earlier point, yes, I do love those good McElroy brothers.
Good.
I don't know if you've reached how far you are in Adventure Zone, but the end of Balance made me cry. It was
yes. Beautiful. Oh my gosh. I haven't listened to the new. I mean, I think they're doing new campaigns now, mm-hmm. but I sort of dropped off listening after they finished the Griffin's campaign. And I remember, like, I don't want to spoil it, but just that arc when it ends, and I just remember laying in bed like tears streaming down my face because it was just so emotional.
It was a beautiful narrative moment that I had not experienced in other medias, at least not in podcast media. So I'm listening to like this essentially audio drama, which I guess you guys have more audio dramas than we do. We in the States, we don't really do audio dramas, but you guys do that as a matter of course on like BBC Public Radio.
Yeah, there's loads of I mean, they're not really podcasts, but there are a lot of shows that get adapted into radio kind of even now. So I think it's definitely, yeah, a bit bigger over here than it might be in the States.
Right. So my experience with that kind of narrative was so limited. So to have such an emotional experience at the end of something, I'm just like sitting at work on my keyboard and like, you know, they're wrapping all the storylines up and everything's coming together and it's this big emotional moment. And I'm just like, Anna, you cannot cry.
Oh yeah, I definitely get that.
I do think that there is something to be said for getting together and sitting down and having this, it essentially doing interactive storytelling. It's like a big choose your own adventure, and I do think there is something to be said for getting together and doing that. So I hope that that's something, you know, if you're interested, that you can find. And I'm sure that folks listening, if you want to comment on this episode and let us know areas that you can find, connect with folks to play D&D, please let us know, because that's something that I'm also trying to do.
Taco and Magnus and Merle get together is because of Craigslist, but Craigslist is just a gnome named Craig who like posts things on trees, like asking for fruit. So if you have a list and you want to put it on a tree, then I will look for it.
Right, exactly. All right, you can find us in a forest near you. As we're winding down and we're starting to kind of get into the twilight hours of the podcast, I'd like to circle back around to art for you. And I'm curious whether or not, you know, with the popularity of your comic and your book being fully funded and, you know, now you're self-publishing, has there been this moment of I made it for you?
I think it would have been when I got approached by Unbound, the publishers who helped crowdfund my book, when they first approached me about it, and I met up with some people and we just went to a little cafe and they talked about how it works and what I could do, and then I walked away and I was like, oh wow, that's actually really cool, like that's a big thing. But I don't know, I think maybe I kind of get it a lot in like small bursts, like, you know, even when a comic goes really viral and you're like, wow, yeah, I've made it. Or just when lots of people comment on something and a comic does particularly well, I think I have that moment where I'm like, yeah, I'm happy with where I am. Luckily, I haven't had that period where I'm like, oh, I'm going downhill. but yeah, I think there's lots of moments where I feel quite proud.
I wanted to particularly ask that question of you because you handle mental health topics in particular. And I've asked that question of a lot of the artists that I've had on the show just to see what their definition is of success and the feeling of I made it and what that means to different people. But when you're dealing with anxiety and depression and other forms of mental illness, I think it can be hard to give yourself credit for what you've done. Have you dealt with that?
Yeah, oh, all the time. I have like a really bad case of imposter syndrome where, you know, like I'll work really hard on some comics and then I'll post them and then I'll think I'm really proud of this and I really like this. But then sometimes when people comment on it or compliment it, I just think, oh, no, you're lying. Like, it's not good. It's terrible. And it's not so hard through like a screen like this when you're talking to someone, but definitely in real life, like when someone compliments me on it, I'm just like, I don't know what to say. Like, that's the thing about mental illness. It just makes you, it kind of dampens all your achievements.
I think that talking about imposter syndrome is something that consistently comes up on this show. Because like it or not, you know, I'm talking about people's history and we tend to get into the nitty gritty of what they're dealing with. And I think a lot of content creators deal with imposter syndrome. I think it's very easy, you know, you're getting all this external validation for the things that you're creating, but it's easy to have this internal monologue of just like, oh, they don't mean it, or, oh, you know, they just, you know, don't know how bad it is, or, oh, like, none of this actually proves that I'm good. And I think that talking about this and seeing that, you know, people that have their own books out and people that are, you know, working for Blizzard and people that create art or cosplay that is seen around the world, that has won, you know, like the biggest of cosplay contests, these people are all struggling with imposter syndrome. These people are all dealing with that nagging voice in the back of their head that's saying, it's not good, everyone's lying to you. And I think just having that realization helps kind of combat that. I don't think it makes it go away 100%, but I think it's good that we address this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's something everyone deals with to an extent. Like, you know, there's this perception that if you accept a compliment, then you're arrogant, and you have to kind of protest and be like, oh, no, it's nothing, or else, you know, you won't be seen as humble. But it's, yeah, I think it's one of those things where imposter syndrome goes very sort of hand in hand with mental illness, because your perception of reality is kind of completely distorted anyway. So, it makes sense that if you try and think of something you've done as good, it just doesn't work. Like, your brain is just telling you no.
Yeah. And on one hand, I think it's a double-edged sword, because I think that voice kind of pushes us to be better. But at the same time, I think it's very detrimental to people to think that, oh, the stuff I make is always not good enough. Like, you want a balance between wanting to grow and also being content in the work that you're currently doing.
Yeah, definitely. It's just so hard.
Turns out, existence is pain.
Wish someone told me. I didn't sign up for this.
I feel like that is a grown adult's motto. It's like, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, it's too much.
Should we talk about how being a grown adult is not at all different from being, you know, your teenage self or the person you were in your early 20s? I can't speak after mid to late 20s, so I'm still in that phase. But I think, you know, as an adult, as a child, you think, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to figure it all out and everything's going to be fine. And then when you are in your 20s and you're in college or university and you're thinking, when I get out of college, when I finish this thing, I'm going to have it figured all out and it's going to be fine. And then as you keep passing different milestones in your life, you're going, I'm going to figure it all out after this thing. And then everything will, I'll finally have my stuff together and everything will be fine. And I think that the lesson is that you never figure your stuff out, and it's just continuously learning and growing and trying to be a better person, but you never fully feel like, yes, I am an adulty adult now.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think especially when you're, like you said, when you're younger, you're like, I can't wait to be a grown-up, I can do what I want, and I'll have money, and life will be so good. And then you get to adulthood and you're like, I have to work for my money, and I have to do things and like pay bills, and it's just like so hard. And then I think everyone especially goes through it when, like, if you go to university, when you're there, you're like, oh, this is just my period where I'm just having loads of fun. After I graduate, I'll just do this and this, and it will be amazing. And then you graduate, and then you're like, oh, I have to do stuff now. And then you just don't know how to do it. It's important to set goals, but to not think, you know, if you don't reach them, I think it's important to learn that it doesn't make you like a failure and, you know, that you're not a real person or stuff. It's just like, no one knows what they're doing.
TLDR, no one knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
I think that is the perfect moment to end our podcast on, the just realization that we're all figuring it out.
No one knows what they're doing. We're all idiots. It's fine.
And that is how we are going to end this wonderful interview. Chuck, could you let people know where they can find you?
Yes. So you can find me on Facebook and Tumblr and Instagram under the handle Chuck Draws Things. And my Twitter is Charlubby. So CharlUbby.
And I'll have those links down below. Again, her book is called Bird Brain. It can be found on Unbound, and I'll put that in the show links. Go ahead and pledge if you would love to see more of her beautiful content. All right, until the next one. Bye, guys.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. And I hope if you go check out her comics that you find them adorable, relatable, as much fun as I do. I really enjoy her work, and I cannot thank her enough for coming on. If you also enjoy her work, please consider picking up a copy of her book. There's links at her Twitter, and I'll put some links down below for you to check it out. If you would like to let me know how much you liked the podcast or leave any of your thoughts, you can leave me a review on iTunes. That really helps me out. It helps me get more viewers. It helps me reach a wider audience, which in turn lets me have access to more folks to interview to bring you a better show. So it would really help me out if you would go to iTunes and leave me a review. If you would like to get in contact with me on Twitter, I am at General Chat Pod. And if you'd like to send me an email with some topics you'd like me to talk about on the show, I am at generalchatpodcast@gmail.com. Until the next one, see ya.